Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for downloading the Corner Office podcast. Fresh episode for you today. This time, Dennis Muilenburg, the CEO of the Boeing Company. Boeing is America's biggest exporter. It's the Defense Department's second largest contractor as well. And they are coming off a record-breaking year with revenue topping $100 billion for the first time. Aerospace, and Boeing in particular, was part of what helped the United States drive the global economy in the 20th century, and it remains a force in the American economy and worldwide today. I talked to Dennis Muilenburg, literally in his corner office, on the 36th floor of Boeing's corporate headquarters in Chicago, Illinois.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Dennis Muilenburg, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Kai. It's good to be with you.
So I want to take a quick virtual tour of the office here for a minute. And there's all kinds of airplane paraphernalia, and that's awesome and cool. You got a bicycle in the corner?
Yeah.
Did you bike to work today? It's 30 degrees in Chicago.
Well, I didn't bike to work, but cycling's my favorite hobby.
No, I know. Yeah. I know. Is that how you stay sane, running this company?
It's part of it. I think taking time to invest in health and staying fit makes me a better leader. And it's also part of our message to our employees about, investing in health and well-being and taking care of ourselves while we do our work. We got important work to do, and being healthy makes us better at it.
So. Do you bike in Chicago in the wintertime?
I do. So I have a cold weather bike and warm weather bike, and I do about 10,000 miles a year. So it's my favorite sport. And one of the things I love to do is get out and do bike rides with our team. So
yeah.
I'll visit a Boeing site. I can drum up, a few dozen riders, and we'll hand out Boeing jerseys, and we'll go out and ride 20 miles. And it's a great way to spend time with the team and, get a little exercise and get a feel for what's going on in the business.
The big boss says, let's go for a bike ride. Who's going to say no, right? I'm just saying. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, 102-year-old company.
Yeah.
Right? Coming off your best year ever, right? Mm-hmm. How much of that was you, and how much of that is, this is just a good time to be an aerospace company in the global economy?
Yeah. Well, it's all about the team, and I'm just extraordinarily proud of our team's performance. We have the most amazing talent in the world, and I think that is the number one key to our success. It's also true that the aerospace business, the marketplace, is extremely strong, and I would argue the best industrial sector in the world. So when we take a look at the state of aerospace today, it is a robust and growing marketplace. The world needs about 43,000 new airplanes over the next 20 years, commercial airplanes. Passenger traffic around the world is growing at about 6 to 7% a year. So it's outpacing GDP worldwide. It's being driven by the fact that we have this middle-class population that can now travel for the first time in history.
Globally, right?
Affordably. Estimates are that 80% of the world's population has yet to take a single flight.
Hmm.
So when you think about future growth, aerospace is an extraordinarily strong growth sector. And I think Boeing is differentiated within that because we have deep critical mass across commercial, defense and space, and services. And we're really the only aerospace company in the world that has that critical mass across all sectors. And that really gets back to our talent. So I think the success of the company that we're seeing right now is a combination of a great, strong market, a company that's well-positioned in that market with the best talent in the world.
So there's a lot in there. I want to unpack it a little bit. And I appreciate you wanting to deflect credit to the team. But I do want to talk about you for a second. You've been at this company your entire professional life.
Yeah.
Why?
I came to the aerospace world because of my interest in airplanes and space. So I grew up on a farm in Iowa and spent my youth there, and always was intrigued by flight and the space program. Back in those days was still early in the development of space. That always caught my imagination. I love the idea of flight. There's a lot of open sky in Iowa, right? So I had a clear view of the sky. And I had the opportunity to go to Iowa State and get my aerospace engineering degree, and was approached by Boeing after my junior year in college for an internship. And that summer internship got me hooked.
You ever miss designing planes? Just actually doing the grunt work of making a plane?
I do. I came to Boeing as an intern and as an early engineer with the goal of being the world's best airplane designer, right? That's what I love to do. I love to design. And I spent the first decade of my career doing that in Seattle. And having that technical underpinning, understanding of the business and appreciation for the complexity of airplane design and how to do it safely, and just the pure joy of being involved in designing airplanes and these incredible flying machines, that's all part of what caught my imagination. And so I got hooked on Boeing at an early age, and I've been here for 33 years, and I just couldn't be more happy with the opportunities I've had.
How come the United States dominates so much in aerospace? I mean, we've got Airbus, and there's Bombardier and Embraer and all of those. Boeing and American aerospace are pretty much it. How come?
I think America still wins because of innovation, right? I think the innovative spirit of our people, our economic structure, the way our companies run, the way we're able to take smart risk and invest for the future, the incentives associated with driving innovation. And I think there's just this certain spirit of adventure, this spirit of innovation that really allows us to lead globally. I think that's a differentiator. I see it in our culture. And then our ability to do that at a global scale. So while we have strong leadership here in America, we have customers and talent and partners around the world. And this idea of innovating and collaborating, I think it's just part of who we are. And it's unique to the American spirit.
So here's the working thesis of this interview. That aerospace is the global leading example of what America is good at right now, right? Because of innovations both from this company and others, right? But in a way, what Boeing is a manufacturing company, right? I mean, you're a big industrial manufacturing company. Yeah. What does it take to be a manufacturing company in America today?
Yeah. I think being a manufacturing company in America today is harder than it's ever been.
How come?
Because I think the economy, the nature of work, what's valued in our society, the perception of what are the jobs of the future? Over time, it's moved a bit away from manufacturing and building hardware.
Mm-hmm.
It's moved more towards digital, software, different sectors. And while we're a very intense software and digital business, we also build big, complex hardware. There used to be more of that in this country. And as a result,
you say it as a lamentation.
Yeah, I think there's incredible value that comes from the ability to design and build complex machines that drives economic value. It drives jobs growth. It enables the rest of the economy. I think about what we do in the aerospace world as an enabler more broadly, and there is really no other industry like it. We like to say our mission as a company is to connect, protect, explore, and inspire the world through aerospace innovation. That is a big, audacious goal. And I think it's something that really drives economic value and talent more broadly. And that idea of being able to take on the most audacious goals, you think about what's happened over the last century, the big steps of mankind, going from walking on the earth to walking on the moon, right? From riding around on horses to flying in airplanes, right? The massive transformations that have happened. Aerospace has been at the leading edge of a lot of that, and we tend to drive ripple effect into other sectors, medical devices, mobile communications, advanced materials. A lot of those technologies that benefit society more broadly get started in aerospace. So it's a high-value sector, and this idea of having to design and build, and in the end, fly these incredibly complex machines, the act of flying is something that drives real technology advancement.
So that's admirable and aspirational, and I subscribe to a good, healthy chunk of that. How are you feeling now, though, about this economy, its prospects, and where we are globally, given the changes that are happening in the global economy.
Yeah. Well, it's a challenging geopolitical environment right now, right? So we're dealing with, you know, trade issues and a challenging trade environment around the world. At the same time, you know, we're seeing strengthening economy right now, which is helping us in the business. I think in the U.S. here, significant regulatory reform, which has unleashed business, I think it's been very beneficial.
So give me an example of how regulatory reform, which is coming from the White House, right, and the president, how has that helped Boeing?
A lot of it has been in streamlining of government processes. So you think about things about certification, pace of being able to bring new products to the marketplace. Things like foreign military sales and streamlining that process has allowed us to build our defense business more rapidly.
So then the government shuts down and you can't certify new planes, you can't get foreign sales licenses, and you sit there at the big desk over there thinking, how am I running this company when the government's not even up?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, with the recent government shutdown, those offices were part of the essential operations and they kept running.
All right.
So we were able to continue our production lines, but that was an area of risk that we were paying close attention to. That's why we're big advocates right now of let's avoid another government shutdown. Let's find a solution. Let's keep this country moving forward. Another big thing to us has been tax reform. That has been incredibly beneficial, and I think
why though, sir? Because Boeing was doing great before the tax bill.
But it's unleashed another wave of innovation. So when you look at what are we doing with the benefits of tax reform, and I know there are some critics out there right now that suggest tax reforms are just making corporations richer. The fact is, what it's done is it's unleashed capital that we're reinvesting in the business. Our number one use of cash is investing in innovation and R&D.
Raising salaries too?
And raising salaries. So let me tell you what we've done with the tax reform money. So day one, after tax reform was passed, we allocated an additional $300 million directly to our employee base. That went into three categories: workplace investment, so improving the work environment, office spaces, resources for our team. $100 million of it went into the actual workforce, and that went into educational programs, healthcare, investments in salaries and opportunities, additional degree programs. And we put an additional $100 million into our community investments. So this was benefiting veterans and their families, charitable operations, volunteer operations. That was the first thing we did with tax reform money, $300 million into our workforce. We also amped up our R&D and our innovation spend. You know, over the last 5 years, we spent more than $35 billion. But tax reform has given us another jolt of investment. And these are long-term paybacks. So that's part of what's happening right now. It's really driving our momentum as a company.
I want to get to the long-term nature of your business in a second. But since we've danced around a little bit, I do want to ask you about the president.
Yeah.
The president, for those who might not have seen the news, either had just been elected or was about to be sworn in. I forget exactly the timing. But the president went after Boeing for the Air Force One contract very early in his time. Got on the phone with you. You negotiated a satisfactory deal with the president for the new Air Force Ones. I don't want to get to the merits of the contract. What I do want to ask you is this. Do you think it's appropriate for the president of the United States to be negotiating one-on-one with the CEO of a major corporation in this economy?
Yes.
Why?
And I'll tell you why. What it tells me is one, he cares about business, and he creates open communication lines. And you know, we will have differences time to time. Obviously, we had a tough negotiation, good negotiation on Air Force One. We may not agree on every topic, you know, as we're dealing with things like China trade policy, for example. And you know, we're eagerly supporting the ongoing trade negotiations, hoping to find a solution, one that's not based on continuing tariffs. So that's a place.
What do you think the odds are of that?
I actually think we're headed towards a productive solution. Okay. I see both sides moving in a positive way. So we're hopeful that on the backside of the G20 summit and the ongoing 90-day discussions, that's going to lead to a productive solution. Okay. And I do think Boeing is part of that solution. But there are also other areas where we very much agree, right, on things like tax reform and regulatory reform. from my view, the big thing is he's created an opportunity for business to have a seat at the table, right? We're part of the conversation. We're part of the solution. And the fact that he's willing to create open communication lines, I think makes a big difference. So I applaud him for doing that.
Let me pick up on the China thing for a minute. Some enormous percentage of this company's growth is going to be in Asia over the next decade and a half. You're working with Chinese aircraft manufacturers. What's the downside risk if the current trade environment continues?
Yeah. Well, let me give you a sense of the China market. Passenger traffic growth is growing at about 12 to 15% a year. It's one of the hottest markets in the world. It's becoming the world's largest commercial airplane market. About one-third of the 737 aircraft that we build go to China. So it's a very important marketplace for us. And we have great relationships there with our Chinese customers. We have industrial partners there. COMAC, for example, is a partner that builds parts on all of our commercial airplanes.
Which is a Chinese firm.
And we also know, exactly, and we also know that they're a future competitor, right? And that is the nature of doing business in China is there's both competition and collaboration. That is a fact of how global operations work. We are in the business of finding win-win solutions between countries. So when it comes to China, I'll give you a good example. We've invested in a new 737 finishing center that just opened this past year. We delivered the first 737 to a Chinese customer from that finishing center in December. The business model there is we build the 737 in the U.S. We fly it to China for paint and final seat configuration for particular customers. It creates value in China. It grows jobs in China. It's also part of why we're ramping up the 737 production rate here in the U.S. and growing manufacturing jobs. That is a win-win solution. Aerospace is uniquely has that unique characteristic in the global business model where we create jobs in multiple countries and there is mutual interest in success. China needs the airplane lift. And while we're creating capacity in China, we're also creating manufacturing jobs in the U.S.
And you need the China market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Boeing a global company or an American company?
We're both, right? We're an American company. We're established here. This is our headquarters. This is where we operate. It's where we grew up. It's where our largest customer base is located. But we're very clearly a global company just by the nature of the business. We have partners around the world. While we do 90% of our manufacturing here in the U.S., we have important constituencies and partners and supply chain around the world, and our customers are clearly global. 80% of the commercial airplanes that we build go to customers outside of the U.S. So this is a very unique business model. Again, with the predominance of our manufacturing being here in the U.S., but the predominance of our customers being outside the U.S., we, as an aerospace industry, create about an $80 billion a year trade surplus for the United States. So in these days of a lot of discussion about trade deficits,
I was just going to say, you're singing the president's tune here.
We are the biggest trade surplus generator in the country by far. And of that aerospace trade surplus, Boeing and our supply chain is by far the biggest component.
Let's talk about your supply chain for a second. It is obviously global. You, individually, Dennis Muhlenberg, have a reputation for being exacting with your supply chain. You want good prices, you want quality delivery, and you've been criticized for it. But you make no bones about it. This is your business.
Absolutely. We have high expectations for our supply chain, just as we have for our own operations. So, you know, we're certainly not going to hold our supply chain to standards that we're not going to operate to ourselves. But we have adopted this mindset of what we call a global industrial champion. So we're convinced now that in the future world that we're going to compete in, we can't just be the best in aerospace. As hard as that is, as lofty as that goal is, we have to be better than that. We have to be a global industrial champion in terms of efficiency of operations, in terms of financial returns, ability to attract capital, competing for talent. We're certainly competing for talent outside of the aerospace sector. About 60 to 70% of the work that we do as a company comes up through our supply chain. So for us to be successful as a global industrial champion, we have to have a supply chain that also is industrial champion caliber. I think part of setting high expectations is it's creating better performance. This is a big growing business opportunity, and we expect to win together with our supply chain.
How closely do you follow Airbus, your main global competitor?
Very closely. So, you know, part of what we do is you know, we regularly assess our competition. We watch what the competition is up to. It's part of what we do as our management process is assess our competitors, look at where we have competitive advantage. And I think it makes us better. Again, I love competition. Competition makes us better. The fact that Airbus is a tough, respected competitor, I think is good for us because it makes us better. It forces us to raise the bar, to continue to improve. We can't be satisfied with who we are as a company today. We have to keep raising the bar, and competition forces that.
What's it like to work for you?
Well, it's maybe you should ask my people.
Well, I'll tell you why, because you know, this is radio and people can't really get the vibe of what's going on here, but you come across as very intense.
Yeah.
You're leaning forward, you're very focused on this interview. I imagine it's you can be a challenging boss.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I think if I think about leadership style, certainly, intensity and competitiveness is part of it. I place a lot of value on our people and our team. You know, I start from a place of a values base for how we do our business, right? If you step back from aerospace, you think about what we do in the world, what it really matters. Lives literally depend on what we do, right? Millions of people flying on our airplanes, servicemen and women around the world, their lives depend on what we do. That demands this sense of excellence, utmost integrity in how we do it. That values base of excellence is really important to me. And that's something that I try to amplify as part of my leadership approach. And I do have high expectations for our team, but it's done in a way that's engaging and hopefully in a way that helps our team members be successful and enjoy what they're doing, but also be challenged in what they're doing.
With you mentioning lives depending on what you do, I have to ask you about the Lion Air crash in Indonesia a number of months ago. There's been reporting, as I'm sure you've seen, that in an effort to get your new airplane, the 737 MAX, into the fleet as fast as possible, Boeing was perhaps not as diligent with safety instruction as it should have been. Balance for me the pressures you feel to drive this company to profitability and that idea of lives being on the line.
Yeah. There is no question whatsoever that safety is number one. And safety of our products and the work we do for our customers is always paramount. There is no compromise ever to those values when it comes to safety and integrity and quality. That's what makes our business work. And certainly with the Lion Air incident, any time an accident like that happens, it's tragic. Our hearts go out to the families that have been affected by this. Thankfully, accidents like this don't happen very often in our industry, but when they do, we take it very seriously, and we try to learn from that and make our company even better. But this is something that weighs heavily on us as a company, and I think just reminds us again of the importance of what we do, and that we always put safety and the integrity of our work first. And certainly I've seen and read some of those reports that you referenced, but I can tell you with all clarity and all certainty that there's never a compromise on safety to try to gain some market advantage or to try to reduce cost or to speed up schedule. That is the worst thing that we could possibly do as a company. We're a long view company. You don't cut corners on safety to achieve a tactical business goal. We invest in safety and integrity because that's the only way you become a 100-year company. That's the only way you become a 200-year company. So this is really important to us. It's part of who we are as a company.
I was walking around the hallways before we came in here, and you were in another meeting, and there was a wall with airplane models on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are many walls in this place with airplane models on them and in this office.
I do but, like airplane models.
Well, and they're cool, right? I get it. I was struck by the plaque underneath one of them. It had the 747 and the 767 and the 737 and 27 and all of them going back. Only 11 original airframes in this company in the 100 years it's been running.
On the commercial airplane side.
Right,
airplane. Which
gets to the bets you're making now as you consider a new midsize aircraft, the 797, it's been dubbed. You're making a bet today on what the market's going to be like in 15 years because that's how long it takes to design a new
airplane. You got it.
It's crazy.
Yeah, this is part of that long-term view of a business. And again, I think unique to the aerospace business model, where a new product introduction, an all-new commercial airplane, is a decade-plus sort of investment. And so our ability to see what the future is going to be, what is the market going to need, how are traffic patterns changing, what technologies are going to be available, what disruptions might happen, our ability to put that all together into a new airplane product and literally invest billions of dollars of our own money to create that product for the future, knowing that once it's in service, it's going to last for decades. You know, we're flying airplanes today that have been in fleets for 20, 30 plus years. On the military side, airplanes that have been in service for 50, 60 years, right?
Yeah.
So we have to have that long-term view. That's why we can never make short-term motivated decisions. We really have to have this long-term strategic view, invest for the future. And it is a big stakes game, right? We're trying to navigate our way through disruptions, and this pace of technology is always speeding up. So we have to create new airplanes for the future that can soak up new technology, incorporate new technology over time. This is a fascinating business model that's a combination of short-term technology pace and long-term investment.
Fascinating, but it's got to be slightly terrifying.
Yeah. Well, I think it's part of what makes this business fun, right? So it's part of what attracts us to this business. It's a business that clearly impacts the world, right? We can do great things for the world, positive things, like no other business. It is a high-stakes investment kind of business. It's on the innovation leading edge. It does have risk, but we also know how to manage that risk. This is all part of what makes aerospace such a great business. You know, it really moves the needle in terms of benefiting the world and economic growth. And it's got a sense of adventure to it and a sense of the unknown that, you know, makes it part of what I think attracts the talent that's in this industry.
Dennis, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kai. It's great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go. That was my conversation with Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg. Thanks so much for listening. You can hear more conversations like this one by subscribing to the Corner Office Podcast wherever you do choose to get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a review, would you? It helps us out. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bonner. This episode, though, by Maria Hollenhorst. Marketplace on the Radio is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Another episode for you in a couple of weeks.